welcome to Real Talk. Hope you're having a nice lunch. It's 12 noon on Tuesday, September 26th. I'm Susan McCabe, your host for Real Talk. We're here at noon on Tuesday every week to satisfy my curiosity and hopefully yours, dear listener. Real Talk is about anything and everything. So send your topic questions to me at realtalk@voiceofvashon.org, and I'll find an expert to answer those questions. We're here thanks to Windermere Vashon, who supports not only our emergency alert service, but all our community information programming, including all our talk shows. I am delighted to have in the studio Antonia Green, who is a card-carrying shaman and psychotherapist, because I'm curious, and I hope you are too, about shamanism. Is it myth? Is it spiritual practice? Is it therapy? Antonia is here to tell us. Welcome, Antonia.
Hi. Thank you, Susan.
So glad to have you here. This is a question that has been interesting me for years. I've watched you go through shaman training in your life, and never really got a chance to ask you why or what it is. So how do you define shamanism?
Well, okay. Shamanism, you know, is 40,000 years old. So to say that there's one definition of shamanism would be like, you know, asking the variety of trees around the planet, right? So, but I think that one of the things that we are in agreement with, and what has carried through indigenous tribes all the way to what we call modern shamanism, are a few certain elements that that define shamanism. So what it is, it is a being in relationship with all that is. It is a belief that everything is alive. Everything contains energy. And that the more we can hold our awareness of that aliveness, the more the world speaks back to us. So it's the Peruvian shamans who I've studied with call it Aini, being in right relationship. And that means right relationship with nature, having an alive and vibrant relationship and reverence for nature. That would be the first thing and the second thing. And a shaman is one who is able to access alternate states of consciousness. So in a sense, we access alternate states of consciousness every night when we go to sleep. So we can all do it. It's a question of being able to open the mind in a certain way and in certain ways that we can shift, actually brainwaves shift, and different ways of being and thinking can occur. The other two would be an interest. The action part of shamanism is in ritual and ceremony. And again, ritual and ceremony are practiced in different ways depending on the practice that you have, right? It can be as simple as going out in the morning and greeting the sun. Or having a meditation practice, something like that. And the other, I think, crucial element of the definition of shamanism is thought, how we think.
I want to back up to the accessing alternate ways of thinking, because you compared that to sleep, which, to my understanding, sleep is when our subconscious is most active. So when you studied shamanism, did you learn ways to access the subconscious in a waking state?
Yeah, absolutely.
How does that work?
Well, in waking and sleeping. So one of the forms of shamanism that I've studied is the Toltec path, which is very much in line. Remember the Castaneda novels?
Yes.
And Don Juan and lucid dreaming. Mm-hmm. So in lucid dreaming, you train yourself to wake up in the middle of a dream. And so you are actually shifting your consciousness between waking and sleeping, and you can actually get in there and change your dreams if you want to. We also do a practice here on the island every summer called a Metote ceremony. We had one in August, which is an all-night dreaming ceremony.
Really?
And yep, and we keep a fire going all night long, and we prepare all day, and we're working with the states of dreaming and waking all night. So people are sleeping a little bit, and they're waking a little bit, and they come to the fire, and they're as the night goes on, as you can imagine, you know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, the world of sleeping and waking start to merge into one.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yes.
So how do you use what you have learned in your daily life, and how do you help others use shamanism?
I use it almost all the time in my daily life. Because after you've trained in something, right? I mean, mm-hmm. It becomes so much a part of you that it becomes a way of being. It becomes a way of being. So practical aspects of it would be the practices that I've incorporated into my life, a commitment to the environment. My dream life is kind of my favorite thing. And of course, as a therapist,
it's a happy place, yeah.
I also, yeah, you know, it's not always a happy place, but it's always a curious place.
Okay.
And as a psychotherapist too, dreams have always been of great interest to me. Yeah.
It seems
we're inviting Gail Kellner into the conversation. Welcome, Gail.
Thank you, Susan. Happy to be here. In this day and age, it seems perhaps like it's more important than ever to be in right relationship to nature.
Absolutely.
And can you talk a little bit about your practice and what shamanism brings to the modern world?
I've had the great honor and privilege to visit and work with the indigenous Kogi and Arhuaco elders in Colombia. And they have been wisdom keepers for thousands of years. They escaped the Inquisition, which is how they've been able to survive, way up high in the Sierra Nevada mountains of Colombia. And they believe that their job has been to preserve and protect the environment of the world. They believe they live in the heart of the world. And our work with them really touched me so deeply around actually their expression of heartbreak regarding what we've done to the planet and what we're continuing to do with the planet. And that, you know, we literally may not have much more time, and we know this. And their reverence they have nothing, and they live so simply from the land, on the land, with the land, that it's been an incredible learning relationship with them.
And when I hear you say how simply they live, it tells me how we humans have added layer upon layer upon layer of distance and isolation from the earth.
Right.
How, if at all, could shamanism be used to help us remove some of those layers and become closer to the earth?
Yeah. Well, you know, when I'm working with my students, one of the things that I really emphasize is the act of making offerings, which the Arhuacos and the Kogi Mamos call pagamento, And, you know, you can make an offering in any way. They use coca leaves.
Mm-hmm.
You can use thought or breath to just go outside in the morning and greet the sun, or, you know, offer a flower, or offer a little tobacco or a little wine to the earth. And it's not so much that, you know, these are absolutely the things that you do as much as it is the intention behind them, which is to allow ourselves to, I mean, most of us on Vashon love nature, right? And we take our dogs and we walk the beaches and we walk the forests and, you know, and I mean, that's what it is. It's being in that place of love.
It's a way of offering gratitude and recognition.
A way of offering gratitude and recognition. And that we are, you know, I think I heard Michael Mead once say, you know, it's not that the earth is in trouble. It's we who are in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she'll be fine without us.
I do wonder if she's in the midst of shrugging us off these days, given that we have committed global warming and are now paying the price for it.
Yes.
I sometimes get the sense that the earth is ready to shrug off this human infestation.
Yeah.
Do you hear from shamans with whom you are in touch anything about that, about the earth's attitude toward us, if you will?
Well, the Mamos say that she's had it, that she is, you know, she's irritated. And I say she because we think of her as Mother Earth. That you know, some of the earthquakes and the floods and everything that's going on is a manifestation of her not being treated well, being raped and pillaged, and you know. But this is the doom and gloom part, you know. And what we like to do too is to not focus so much on the doom and gloom, but to focus more on awareness. You know, awareness that we do have to wake up. You know, if we value the fact that we need air and water to live, you know, we have to wake up and we have to become aware and we have to, you know, spread the message to, you know, those that aren't as aware at this point. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Gaia theory, you've probably heard that human beings are considered no more different than, you know, no more apart from the earth than, you know, our liver is from our, you know, from our body or our heart or our any of our essential organs.
Exactly.
That in fact we are all part of one system.
That's
and it really is one
that
system.
We're
it's a
all
false,
interconnected.
Yeah, that it's a it's a false perception of reality to think that it's otherwise.
Yeah.
How does helping people understand that or bringing them back to that, how does that help in the healing? I hear you talk about that you have a a practice that you help people. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, I think there are two different elements of what I do. One is teaching and one is individual healing work, which I do, you know, I'm a psychotherapist and a shamanic practitioner. So I think I'm a bit of a hybrid.
Not a lot of these around.
Right. Yeah. So in my healing work, usually we're working more with, you know, particular, you know, issues, health issues, or mental health issues that we're working to, you know, to ameliorate. Sometimes, you know, sometimes in that work, what's when I'm really deeply listening and in my intuitive sense, what I'm told or what I feel is to take the person outside, you know, and that sometimes the work will have to do with, you know, teaching a person or guiding them through a grounding exercise into the earth or bringing light in from the sun. Which sometimes gets a little challenging here in the Northwest.
Not with global warming. Antoni, we're talking with Antonia Green, who is a shamanic practitioner and a psychotherapist. You mentioned, Antonia, going into your intuitive sense. Mm. And I'm wondering, shamanism has kind of been pushed aside with practices like witchcraft. Mm. And how much do you see that as a discounting of the intuitive?
Oh, very much.
So how does that feed the myths about shamanism?
Yeah, well, the myths about shamanism, first of all, is that, you know, you have to be an indigenous person from a tribe to practice shamanism. That's not true. Maybe in order to practice that particular tribal shamanism, you have to be from that tribe. Mm-hmm. But anybody can practice shamanism. Another myth is that it's a religion. It is not a religion. It is a practice. It is a spiritual belief system. But it is not a religion. So really, you know, anyone is welcome to practice or to learn.
And it's not in conflict with religion.
Well, it may be in conflict with some religions that teach that it's a form of witchcraft or devil worship, which is most certainly is not. It's a form of learning to be mostly in right relationship with ourselves and from a place of heart, not head. You know, so we're in our culture and, you know, we're a very head-oriented, a thinking, analytic culture. And I think we've not only have we forgotten our relationship with nature, but we've forgotten our relationship to the heart and to goodness, basic goodness and kindness, right?
And listening to our own voices.
And listening to our own
intuitive sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. The major religion, many major religions, mm-hmm. Christianity among them, separates the body and the soul.
Yes.
And hence, right. Glorifies the soul, but the body is considered to be dirty or something that you want to
right.
move away from.
That's right.
And so
yeah.
sounds like yeah. shamanism really integrates these ideas
and
as being part
is
something
sacred,
to be celebrated.
You know, and something to be celebrated and something to be, you know, worn, you mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. like a God-given skin, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It sounds like it has some things in common with some Zen Buddhist practices.
It does. It does. Except we have a lot more stuff.
Stuff.
Sometimes we call it the path of paraphernalia. You know, we carry medicine bundles around and drums and rattles and all kinds of things to clear the air. And
so, Antonia, you have a medicine bundle here with you. What's
yes,
in your medicine
yes.
bundle?
What is it? Well, what's in my medicine bundle is very mysterious.
Oh.
It's actually a bunch of rocks.
Kind of heavy then.
There are rocks and crystals that I've collected from all over the world. And each rock goes through a very specific process. This is the Peruvian tradition. So the rocks are considered sacred. And they're also to be held lightly, knowing that they're just rocks, right? So, you know, do I need them? No, not really. But yes. So that's the paradox.
They're touchstones.
They're touchstones.
Are the rocks viewed as living creatures?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So that's part of mm-hmm. the
right.
connection to
right.
all that is
right. Right.
alive.
Right. And when I use them in healing, you know, some of the rocks are placed on the body, mm-hmm. rocks and crystals, and they serve as sort of magnets to help pull energies that need and want releasing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What relationship does that have to things like acupuncture and the Chinese concept of qi, which is energy?
Yeah, I'm not an aficionado on acupuncture or Chinese medicine, but yes, I mean, I believe that system also has very similar concepts around energy.
And how it moves
systems,
through the body.
And how it moves through the body and how it moves through everything.
So you use rocks, and crystals as conduits for energy, and perhaps acupuncture uses needles.
Yeah.
You mentioned science and what a head culture we are. Mm-hmm. I've read some things that indicate that science, particularly quantum mechanics, quantum physics, is beginning to fall in line with these ancient spiritual practices. Yeah, how do you read that? How do you see that?
Oh, I'm not a scientist, so not the best person to quote science. But I do know certainly that science is beginning to prove that everything is energy, that everything is interconnected, that everything is alive. And so it's very exciting. And also the neurobiology, which is happening. And, you know, we're understanding healing and therapy in different ways. One of the things that we use in shamanic journeying is the drum. And what the drum does, I'll just give a little.
Let's have a little sample.
Just a little. So when we're doing a shamanic journey, you notice that the pace is rather quick, and it's monotonous. And what that does after about 10 minutes is it actually starts to shift the brain waves into a more of a trance state, where we can then access that journey space that we're looking for.
The subconscious, if you will?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that gets into interesting territory.
Oh, it does.
Yeah,
the crossovers, you, as a psychotherapist, you could probably talk about the crossovers between Freud and shamanism. Tell us a little bit about that.
You know, in Freudian psychology, this would just not happen.
Right.
Everything is considered comes from drive theory. But Jungian therapy, Jung was a shaman, although he was loath to admit it because he so wanted to be accepted by the mainstream. His book that came out only recently, The Red Book, is an extraordinary example of Jung's journey through shamanism and symbolism, which is, and Joseph Campbell as well, who was a mythologist and talked very much about symbolism and shamanism, and how when we go into journey space, we begin to access symbols. And some of those symbols come in the forms of animals or gods or goddesses or spirit guides or mountains or trees. The tree of life is a common symbol, or the ocean. And those symbols become messengers to help us interpret. You know, we can go into a journey and ask, where are my keys? It can also be a very practical application.
That's interesting.
You know, it doesn't always have to be esoteric. It can be extremely practical. Or how much should I charge for this session?
Huh.
So you're removing your sort of everyday analytic hat, and you move into a different aspect of, you can call it self. Probably the Jungians would call it another part of ourselves, the higher self. Indigenous shamans would say, no, it is spirit speaking to you.
A collective spirit? Is that what you're speaking of? A collective spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Of which we are all part.
Right.
Right. Exactly. And that's the Jungian idea of the collective unconscious.
Exactly.
Of course, so.
Yeah. Interesting. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if shamanism is having any kind of revival. I'm not in touch with it enough.
Oh, very much.
Is it?
All over the world.
And so I'm wondering, given that our, if you will, traditional institutions, traditional in the last 100 years or so, like government, like media, those two things, even church, are showing their feet of clay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if this is a time when humans are more likely to embrace something more intuitive if they can no longer trust these traditional institutions.
Oh,
is shamanism something that can help us learn to trust ourselves more? How would you address that?
I would say without question. I feel, and I honestly feel this way, I feel like if people knew what some of the teachers that are out there have to offer, they would be, you know, they'd be banging down the door.
Like what?
Well, you know, as you said, the, you know, first we've forgotten to love ourselves. We've forgotten what that means. We're taught to put everything else ahead of ourselves, or we're taught that ambition and success are the most important things, right? And I'm not discounting those things. We are Westerners, and we do have dreams and desires and ambitions. Shamanism can also help with those, because when we're in right relationship with ourselves and with those around us and with our environment, things start to flow. You know, there's, you know, my most simplistic statement about it is I've become more happy. A much happier person.
Does it affect your choices? Does one make better choices for the self when you're more in touch with the self?
Well, I would put that question back on you, you know, therapist that I am, how could it not?
Right.
Right. When we're in touch with ourselves and we're making decisions and choices that are congruent, you know, asking a question, is this mine to do? Is this mine to do right now? Is this right? You know, we learn as we develop our intuitive sense. We learn to be able to read our own body responses to what feels right, what doesn't feel right, you know, and make a choice from there. It may not be a black and white choice. Usually choices aren't.
Right, right. How would you tell, Gail, you've got a question.
Oh, I do, but I didn't want to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
You said shamanism is on the rise all over the world. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, there are so many. All you have to do is open your computer and go on YouTube, or, you know, or just punch in shamanism and you'll see so many teachers, you know, and you also have to be careful because there's a lot of false people out there too. But, you know, kind of trying to get on the train. But there are all over Europe now, people are waking up to shamanism. You know, people are going to, like, we went to Colombia, and I've been to Peru. People are, you know, making these journeys to different places. There's a lot of interest in Native American shamanism here in this country. So I think that as we've become more and more separated from the earth and from nature, and we're seeing the results, and so many people are kind of split off from themselves. I think there's a natural draw back to what is real, what is right, and what is true, and out of the trance of our culture.
We have 1 minute left. This has been a fascinating conversation. We've been talking with Antonia Green, who is a shaman and psychotherapist here on Vashon Island. I want to go out with a couple things. One is, how would you advise the average listener to use shamanism in their lives in 30 seconds? And then I want to go out with your drumming.
Okay. Connect with nature more. Connect with yourself. Develop a practice. You can set up a little altar. That doesn't just collect dust that you work with. If you have questions, feel free to look me up.
How do we do that?
You can check out my website, www.antoniagreen.com. That's Green with an E. And you'll find all the information there that you need.
Thank you, Antonia Green, so much for joining us. You've been listening to Real Talk, and Real Talk is made possible thanks to Windermere Vashon, who supports all our community information programming. And tune yourself into this drum. We'll be back next week.